Hey, comedy fans, welcome to another episode of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm your host, my name is Vinny, and joining me today in the studio, it's Michael Yo. This episode and every episode is brought to you by Comedy at the Carlson, the only place you're going to be able to see Michael Yo perform four shows this weekend. You get your tickets now at carlsoncomedy.com. And now let's kick it over to the studio and talk with Michael. And for those of you watching live, feel free to join us in the chat. Good morning, Carlson casters. My guest today is a comedian, talk show host, and former college football player. He traded that all in for the stage. His latest special, I Never Thought, is available now online, and he's performing four more shows here. Comedy at the Carlson this weekend. It's part of his Do I Lie tour. Can you grab your tickets out, carlsoncomedy.com. Good morning, Michael.
What's up? How are you?
I'm really glad, man. I'm really glad to see you today.
I'm excited to be here, Vinny.
Is this your first time in Rochester?
First time in Rochester. And I'm very, I love going to new cities because you find a different, it's so interesting to see different cultures and different ways people do things. Like, I've never heard of a garbage plate. Now, as soon as I land, somebody's like, garbage plate, you got to do it. And she was like, my daughter's a connoisseur of garbage plates. I'm like, oh my God.
Okay. I'm starting to resent the garbage plate thing.
Yeah.
I'm finding out, because I get the pleasure of talking to all the comics like every week, and they all come in and say somebody's just pushing one in their hands at the airport.
It's 100%. Like, as soon as you land, they try to throw a garbage plate at you. And I'm like, yo, this is aggressive for a city. You know, but I'm excited to perform. Like I said, I'm on my Do I Lie tour, and that special Do I Lie, I Never Thought changed my life. So I'm excited to be here.
Man, we're glad to have you.
Yeah.
Glad you survived the garbage plate.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to start off by telling you, you have my word. I will not do any yo jokes.
Oh my gosh.
At you. I hear they're big with my people.
Yes. White people love to come up to me and go, yo, bet you never heard that before. And I've heard it a million times, literally a million times. So if you see me out doing my thing, don't come up to me and go, yo, because no, I've heard it all my life. You understand? All my life I've heard that.
How annoying is it?
Oh, it's so annoying.
Okay.
It's so annoying.
So I followed you for a while, Michael, because like I listened to Corolla on occasion. I've caught
Love
you on
Corolla.
That. And I knew you did a podcast with Joe Coy.
It's the best 23 episodes
of anything ever.
This was before podcasts blew up. We did it in 2012, 2011. And
that is right at the cusp.
I know. We were like, we did it because we're just friends. We always hung out. And we're like, let's do these episodes. And it's called the Yo and Joe Show. And if anybody looks it up, this is raw Joe Coy, raw me, just having a blast. And this was before censors and, you know, everybody got so sent. This was us just having fun. You know, and it's so innocent. Like, we didn't even know about money in podcasting. And we found out from the company. They made a lot of money. We didn't know. But we were getting to like 200,000 downloads back in 2012. I told Joe, if we would have kept that podcast going, I mean, he's already massive and selling out arenas.
Sure.
But that podcast would have made us millionaires.
Especially the timing.
Oh, we were right. It's the only thing I've ever been a part of where after about the eighth episode, we missed 1 week and we got hundreds of emails complaining that we messed up their drive because we were their Wednesday listen. And at that moment, I knew the power of podcasting, but I was too, I guess, just didn't see the vision of it either.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, and then Joe got really busy, started to blow up, and I started going on tour. So, well, not, I started heavily on, I was on entertainment television interviewing celebrities. So my job got busy. So after 23 episodes, we were kind of just like, forget it. You know, and that's one thing, not because he's huge now, that's one thing business wise, I wish we would have kept going.
Sure.
Because we were at the beginning and it was massive. And if anybody goes back and listens to those podcasts, they'll see the magic because it was so raw, fun, and innocent.
All right. I got to go back and check these out.
The Yo and Joe Show.
Well, you know, you're right, though. And I get why you didn't catch the vision for podcasting at that point because there were so many extra steps involved to get a podcast back then.
100%. And we didn't, and it almost, since we didn't know the money that was in it,
right?
We were just like, we're just doing this. Why are we just going to this location? Because it was at an office building. It was out of the way. It was in Hollywood. It was busy. Okay. It took forever to get there. And then we were just like, forget it. Forget it. I tell you the biggest, you know, I tell everyone, there's always one time in your life you'll get a big business opportunity,
right,
or an opportunity.
Okay.
And you take it or you don't. And this one, not the Joe Coy, this one I didn't take. I was, what's his name? He was big at Comic-Con. He's a comic. He was the first host of that show that Taylor Tomlinson's doing now.
Oh,
After Midnight.
After Midnight. Oh, God. What's his name?
Chris something.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. It'll
Chris,
come to
so
me.
He was huge in podcasting world.
Yeah.
And I remember I was on the radio. I had a radio studio in L.A. and at E! Entertainment where I worked. And he came in and goes, I'm going to record this podcast. And I'm like his second guest ever, right?
Okay.
And he goes, you really...
Hardwick.
Hardwick. Chris Hardwick. Yes. He goes, you really should do this podcast thing. And I go, no, I do real radio. And then he sold his company for $20 million like 10 years later. And like that's the moment where this was like in 2008.
Oh, no.
This was like 2008. He basically said, I'll give you the roadmap. I'll help you out. And I'm just starting. And he goes, I think this is going to be big. And my ego was like, I do real radio.
Radio had a bit of an attitude towards podcasts.
That attitude made me lose lots of money.
There's a certain gentleman you're going to see next who told me that podcasts will never, ever catch on. So, you know.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever that's worth. So, Joe Coy got you into stand-up, though, didn't he?
So I was on Chelsea Lately, and I was a reporter. I got hired on Chelsea Lately to defend the celebrities because the way the show was set up was three comics would bash celebrities. I worked for E! I can't bash celebrities because I worked for E! So what I had to
do...
So, yeah. So, well, but they worked for Chelsea.
Sure.
Chelsea worked for E! But their job was to destroy celebrities,
right,
and make fun of them. And my job was to be like, nah, actually, you know, they sold this. I was the fact guy. I gave facts about the celebrity,
right,
and let them. So there was a little bit of balance. And people that love Chelsea, a lot of people hated me because Chelsea said, "You're the celebrity kiss ass. You're always defending celebrities," and people thought this was real, right? And so her fans were like, "Why do you keep putting yourself on the show?" I'm like, "Oh my god, you have no idea."
Keep putting yourself,
I'm just showing up. And
that's how that works.
Yeah, but
I'll be putting myself on Rogan next
right?
week, in case anybody's wondering.
So they kept it going. They kept booking me, and it just took off. And about 3 years in, Chelsea went for like 7 or 8 years. I was on every 3 weeks. About 3 years in, me and Joe became really good friends. And he goes, you're really funny, man. He goes, I know you don't get to show it on the show because we're all kind of crapping on you, but you should do comedy. You should try it once and see if you like it. I tried it once at the Miami Improv. I'll never forget it because I had a big radio show out there. And I tried it once. And when I got off stage, I called my mom and I said, this is what I was born to do.
So it got you, huh?
Right then. Yeah. I knew this was it. I did 15 minutes my first time ever doing stand-up. The owner of the club came up to me and goes, is that your first time? I go, yeah. He goes, all right, tomorrow in West Palm, you're opening up for the Wayans Brothers. And I'm like, oh, this. So I had a crazy type of
way. You should have said, I'm sorry, this stand-up thing isn't going to catch on. I do radio. I know.
So I opened up for Marlon and Sean. And I knew him because I was interviewing celebrities at the time. So I also realized, you know, comedy's about your name and what Chelsea was the hottest thing in the world. So when people saw me, they knew who I was. And so that propelled me and helped me build stage time because people wanted to give me stage time in Hollywood. So I remember Russell Peters about 3-4 years in stand up. He goes, you're going to shoot a special by 8 years. You're going to be a lot further in 10 years than people are. Because it's not about years you do it. It's about stage time. Mm-hmm. And people are going to give you stage time because you're on TV. Now, and Chelsea told me this, don't be a TV guy that just shows up and sucks. Do the work. And Joe instilled that in me. Do the work. So that's why I think I'm moving at a fast rate. But also, like, I really put a lot of work into it. And I love it.
Have you been performing 15 years yet?
No. I'm 12 years in.
12 years in.
12 years in.
Man, and you have two specials.
Two specials, and I'm working on my third right now.
Really?
And so really, I would say I've been good. My first special, Blasian, that was more like, here's my life. Mm-hmm. My second one was about almost dying from COVID. Like, you know, the first 12 minutes is almost dying from COVID, which is really funny through my eyes.
Sure.
And people, and that's actually the special that took me to another level, you know, where I found my voice. The first one, I was kind of, I don't want to say mimicking Joe Coy, but I was very big and running around because that's what he did, because he was my inspiration. He started me in comedy. And then at the second special, I was recovering from COVID still. I wasn't good for like a year, and but I still did stand-up. But what I found out is I couldn't move around as much. But when I sat down and talked to people, that's where I got the biggest pops. And now I'm kind of both. I sit down and stand up. But I found out for that special, me sitting down was great. And I didn't need to move around. Because my voice, I found my voice in comedy. And that was what was so amazing about it, is that people have different styles. And me just sitting down talking to a person is very... Well, it seemed like it was very compelling for them. And that's what took me to the next level.
How long did it take you as a performer doing stand-up before you decided to like mix it up and try that sit-down? Did you just do it for the special? Is it something you've been working on?
I did it after COVID because I didn't have energy to move.
That was it, huh?
But I wanted to perform. Yeah.
Okay.
That's so really cool. It was kind of forced, but it's kind of like I would have never tried that unless that happened. And now I love sitting down.
Yeah,
I love sitting down, because if you can sit down and entertain a whole room of people without moving, that means your words are so good. You don't even have to move. And I think as a storyteller, for me, and this is just for me, it works better just sitting down and talking to people.
Yeah, you know? You are a storyteller. You're a great storyteller.
Thank you. I love it.
It's very compelling is the great word to describe it, because you can tell a story, you take people on a journey with it, but... I just wanted to ask you about your, like, you did the one special about your family, which I think is really cool because it's a great introduction piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if people want to get to know who you are, they got a spot they could start, and they got everything.
Yes.
So were your parents, like, I mean, you're a reporter.
Yeah.
You were going to play football. And then the next thing you know, you're like just making fun of your parents on
I know.
All over the place.
And how
did they handle that?
They loved it. Like, my mom at the beginning hated it. But then she came to one of my shows and everybody was asking her for pictures and autographs. And she was like, oh. So then I go, okay, I won't talk about you anymore. She goes, no, you can talk about me. You can talk about me. Like, now she fell in love with it.
Okay.
So, but she also knows, like, what was interesting is my dad always said, you're going to be successful whatever you put your mind to. And he really meant that, because he seen me as a kid at like 14. I was doing graffiti on clothes when that was the big thing, like airbrushing clothes. Yeah. I've always been a self-starter. And then once I get into something, I don't get into much, but when I get into something, it's 100% in.
Yeah.
And I'm always working on the craft. I love comedy so much because you could pause differently in a joke and it won't hit, or it will hit, or it's like I would say, probably, I don't golf, but I would assume it's like golf. You never perfected it.
Yep.
You just go out and do your best
that's night. An amazing analogy, you know? On it.
You never can perfect, because the joke can always get better.
I don't think people realize how like delicate delivery is.
Oh no.
Like, I don't think the person on the couch who loves stand-up and watches stand-up realizes what you just said is so true. The pause in the wrong spot, the emphasis on the wrong word because you had too much energy and you went to the wrong side and you just say something wrong is the difference between a massive pop and all right.
And tempo. Tempo, once you get them rolling, you can't go slow. It's almost like a wave. It's like... You got to keep them going, and then you slow down.
Yeah.
So, you know, like they always said, there's a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Like different comics, if you listen to them, it's almost like music. They got a rhythm. You know, Martin Norman has a rhythm. Sam Morrell has a rhythm. Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle is more of a storyteller rhythm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you a long story, but it's going to have pops every 10 to 15 seconds.
Yep.
You know, Mark Norman is like, I'm going to give you something every 5 to 6 seconds. You know, Sam is a little bit longer. Like, he'll have a lot of jokes. In a 5-minute bit, you'll hear like 20 jokes right. in there. You know what I mean? So everybody has a different rhythm. And if you really, if you're a comedy fan and you really listen to it just by the rhythm, it's pretty cool because it doesn't change the whole show. It's like boom, 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 pause, boom, boom. Yeah. But that's because that's their rhythm of writing.
And it's interesting because I talked to a psychologist about this once.
Yeah.
We're just having a conversation and the rhythm was brought up about performing. And it's one of those things that it keeps an audience engaged too. It's, like they're listening to a good song. Their head's bopping with
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And instead of singing, they're laughing.
And nobody has any idea that it's literally psychology.
It is psychology because when you have a whole room laughing, rollover laughing, that means you've just got all these people on the same page.
Yeah.
And now they're in rhythm with you. And that's, you know, before I got into comedy, Joe Coy used to come back from tour, and this is the inexperienced me, and he goes, I'm so exhausted. I'm like, why are you exhausted? You're just saying words. And then because to me, it's like, you're just talking. Why is that?
Right.
And then I go on tour, and I'm like, oh, I get it, because you're walking into a room of people that might have had a bad day, that you're really up there exchanging energies. You know, you're giving them laughter. You're giving yourself and they're giving you laughter. But also, I believe in energy. You're taking a lot of bad energy from them, too.
Yes, you are.
Because you're almost like de-stressing them.
Well, science tells you energy is never really destroyed.
So if you have a person, and this is a simple form of it, and everybody's been through this. Everybody's walked into a room and you're like, oh, this is a bad room of people. You could just feel the energy. But one person can come in that room and change that whole energy.
Yep.
Just by being, hey, what's up, guys? You doing all right? You can change the energy. And I feel comedy, why a lot of comics, they call them clowns, like they're happy on the outside but sad on the inside, is because I believe they get so much negative energy. You know, they get laughter, but they're taking everybody's bad energy and turning it into laughter, if that makes any sense. It's an exchange.
Interesting.
Like, I come in with a bad attitude. Maybe I had a crappy day. I want you to make my day better. You make me laugh. I give you laughter, but also I'm giving you bad energy. I know it's kind of weird to say.
You know.
But it's an exchange of energy.
When you put it in the terms of, you know, I used to talk to Joe and I was wondering why he was so tired after a show and stuff like that. I get it, man. I totally understand that. You feel absolutely drained sometimes after 100%. A great show.
Yeah. You feel drained because you gave them everything inside you and you've taken everything they've given you. Wow. So
Can I give it back somewhere? Is there like
I know. I wish you could.
Give me back your laughter.
Right? But I love it, man. Here's what I love about stand-up the most. I've acted in big TV shows. I've worked for CBS, NBC, all these big companies. Mm-hmm. The thing about stand-up is you're your boss and no one can fire you. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a good stand-up and you can sell tickets, you'll work forever.
That's accurate.
You'll work forever. If you can get to a point where you can sell 800 tickets in every market you go to, you will work the rest of your life. If a club books you and knows you're going to sell at least 800 tickets.
Comfortably. Very comfortably.
Very comfortably for the rest of your life. I told my wife the other day, with where I am in my career right now, if I never grew anymore, we would be fine the rest of our lives. And that's what's amazing about comedy. Now, you know, if you know comedy, you're going to grow every year because more people will find out about you. But right now, if I were to never gain one more fan, we'll be fine the rest of our lives as long as I keep putting out new material.
Ladies and gentlemen, the comfortable Michael Yeo.
The very comfortable Michael Yeo. Oh, hey, Rochester.
All right, I'm going to hit up the chat here. We got a question from Manny Muskets, and this is an interesting one. Not something that was on my agenda to talk about, but if you got any hot goss on this, we're interested. Manny Muskets wants to know, how real was the Chelsea Joan Rivers beef?
Okay, so Chelsea, I never witnessed it. Okay. I worked there 8 years. I knew of Joan. I knew she was in our building at a certain time. I knew a bunch of writers on her show. I'd never even heard about it till after she passed, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Chelsea would never talk about it. And I think
that tells me it's real then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't even, actually, Manny, I don't even know the real beef. Well, yeah. What was it?
I don't even know. Just know that they supposedly, after she died, I heard about it too, that they didn't like each other and that there was a lot of like arguments in the building.
See, I never saw any of that. And actually, when I was in the building, I never heard about it either.
Okay.
But you got to understand, when I was on Chelsea, I was a reporter for E! So I didn't work for Chelsea. Chelsea had Chris Frangiola, Heather McDonald. She had Josh Wolf. She had a staff of writers that may have knew about the drama, and they saw her every day.
Sure.
I wasn't there every day.
All right. There's your answer, Manny.
Yeah,
Manny. We don't know.
We don't know, Manny.
But she didn't say anything about it, so maybe she just didn't want to acknowledge any of it.
Maybe so.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who knows? I just like to perpetuate gossip. That's what we're doing here today.
That's what we do.
So one of the questions I like to talk to all of our performers about, and you've had a lot of really interesting thoughts on comedy, energy transfers, you know, the intricacy of jokes. These are the type of things I love to talk about ad nauseum, and I make people like sick and tired of hearing me.
Uh-huh.
So I appreciate that. It was great to hear. But the question I like to ask everybody is really simple. If you were going to step off, if let's pretend you do not have a comedy career.
Okay.
But you have all of the knowledge that you know from everything you've learned up to this point, but you have not done comedy. What would you do differently starting out? How would you approach starting out? This is for the new comic.
I have to say, I think I did it right. I think I was vulnerable. Uh-huh. I think I took every opportunity. I was on TV making lots of money, but driving 4 hours for $25. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I'm very aware.
I drove 4 hours for $25 and 12 minutes of stage time. And I was making a lot of money on TV, but I knew the money on TV, I didn't enjoy that money. Comedy, $25, 4 hour drive, no problem. I love to be on stage. And I think the sacrifices you make, I think for younger comics coming up, you have to be able to say yes to a lot of opportunities you don't want to say yes to. Because the success this is success for me. It's not about money. When you get older and you start having success, you find out it's not really about money.
Yeah.
It's about being able to say no to things you don't want to do. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Because now I would
never... Loud and clear to me.
Now I would never drive 4 hours for $25. But I'm at a level of success where I don't have to anymore.
Right.
So, it's not even about money. It's about, I'm to a place in my life where I don't have to say yes to things I usually had to say yes to coming up.
Yeah.
And that's truly success, to be able to say no to things you don't want to do. And I think I was on Chelsea lately. It was so crazy. It's the biggest show on TV. I was selling out shows, and I didn't even know how to do comedy. Does that... Because the show was so big.
You bring some rarefied air, my friend.
So, but I was smart about it. I'm not good at comedy yet. I got a good 10 minutes, 12 minutes. I would put myself in the middle of the show, bring a Theo Vaughn, bring a Darnell Rollins, bring a, at the time, Chris D'Elia. I was bringing all these comics. I would bring like four comics on the road because we were selling out like a Tuesday or Wednesday night. That's how big Chelsea was. Tuesday or Wednesday night selling 300 to 400 seats and one show, and they would give me a budget to bring in all these comics.
That's incredible.
And so I never put it on me. I never was like, I'm a headliner. I go, I'm part of the show. And I would host it. I'm part of the show. But I never said, I'm going to close the show. The problem with that is people paid a lot of money to come see me then, but I wasn't good.
Right.
Where Joe Coy, when he was on Chelsea, he was like, I would say, where I am now. Comfortability on the stage. Like, I know I can walk into any room, and we're going to have fun tonight in Rochester.
Right.
In my mind, without a doubt, I'm going to do well. Joe was there during Chelsea. So when people saw him, they were like, this dude's amazing. You know, so the opportunity came too early for me.
Right.
But without that opportunity, I wouldn't have been here.
Right. So you know, the nexus. You didn't quite hit the nexus on the head, but you got where you needed to be.
But I am ready for that next pop, whatever it is.
It's coming, man.
Because so when that next pop comes, I know my comedy's ready this time.
Well, you're doing Netflix as a Joke next week, right?
Yeah, and we just sold it out yesterday, the show. Oh. And I called my wife and told her, I almost cried because right now Netflix is the thing, right? And to be, I just wanted to be recognized by Netflix, just be on their radar. And to sell out a theater in LA opening weekend when you have Jerry Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan, Dave Chappelle, all these people performing, and people are like, nah, we're going to go see you.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I'm on a much smaller stage, but still, it's an amazing feeling and to be able to sell out a show with all these greats in town.
Seriously,
and then to rub
elbows
with all the greats, and then to have Netflix going to come out to your show to watch. So hopefully they'll do something with the next special. We'll see. We'll see.
So here's what I'm going to tell you folks right now watching this. Rochesterians, you have four chances to see Michael Yo.
Let's do it.
You're not going to be able to see him next weekend. He's sold out.
That's right.
So you can see him at Comedy at the Carlson this weekend. You get your tickets at carlsoncomedy.com. And Michael, I want to thank you for your time. I know you have to get to another interview this morning. But it really is a pleasure talking to you, man.
And every comic I talk to loves this club. And that's why I'm so excited to be. Like, when I say every one of them, and I talk to some big comics, they love this club. So I'm so excited to meet you people in Rochester.
What?
And hey, get to see some new material and let's have fun.
I'm beyond thrilled to see you. Now, folks, I want to remind you, you could follow Michael on X, Instagram, wherever, at Michael Yo. Michael Yo Comedy on YouTube. Follow his channel. There's a lot of interesting things going on there. You can check out The Yo Show, which is phenomenal. You'll enjoy that. And most importantly, MichaelYo.com.
Yes.
So get your tickets out, CarlsonComedy.com, and we will see you at the show, Rochester.
Later, Rochester.
Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube every Friday morning.
I was like, I got to get out of here.
Dude,
you can also follow
us
on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Carlson Cast.
They're fun.
I mean, you can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify.
Yeah.
You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review.